Welcome back in, McElroy and Kubik in the morning, 8 a.m. It is Monday, January 24th. Before we move on from Buffalo and Kansas City, can you recall seeing a better just quarterback duel in your lifetime? Now, there,
I'm sure there have been other great ones. I mean, I cannot recall.
The Brady comeback in Indianapolis in the AFC Championship game, I was actually at that game. That's one that I might put up against it, but it's obviously this one just happened. We just watched this one. And with just what those two guys were doing individually last night, it's going to be hard for me to move past it. Mahomes threw for 177
after
the 2 minute warning last night.
Yeah, that's
it's
ridiculous.
Mahomes with his legs too. Like, they just showed another highlight and forgot about the early run on the first drive of the game. Like, he made a lot of plays with his legs too last night. I mean, it was really impressive. The only thing that came to mind with me, and it's crazy that my mind went there, but this was like such a crazy moment in my sports fandom. The best championship performance I've ever seen in my own two eyes, the best championship duel I've ever seen, one-on-one, was Phil Mickelson against Henrik Stenson in the British Open a couple years ago. Phil shot like 63.
Where's the dump button?
I'm telling you, look it up.
What?
I'm telling you, look it up. Phil shot like 63. Henrik Stenson shot like 61. It was like the two of the most ridiculous rounds. They blew away the field by a mile, and it was insane. And that's the only thing I could think of last night, where these two quarterbacks are playing at such a high level, so much better than everybody else. It's not even fair. I mean, it's honestly not even fair. For the defense. And by the way, their supporting cast too, not to be outdone.
Absolutely.
Their supporting cast was fantastic.
You give a lot of other players a lot of credit, but just dialing in on these two, maybe the best quarterbacking duel we've seen, at least in quite some time, possibly ever. Seven combined touchdown passes with no interceptions, tied for the most in an NFL postseason game all time. Ever. First postseason NFL game where both quarterbacks each threw for 300, had three passing touchdowns, and zero interceptions. Both quarterbacks led their team in rushing. Second time since 1950 that's happened in a postseason game. The other time Josh Allen was a part of that was a 2019 wild card game, Allen versus Watson, that took place. First postseason game in NFL history where opposing quarterbacks had 300 passing, three touchdowns, no interceptions, and 50 rushing yards as well. It was incredible to see. And what Mahomes has done this postseason, what Josh Allen's done, it's not going to really be talked about as much. He now has more passing touchdowns in a player's first two postseason games of any postseason all time, ever. Yep. And he loses the game last night. But that it was just a phenomenal performance, fun to watch, incredible. Kansas City will now get the AFC Championship game at home. They will face off against Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals. Burrow doesn't throw a touchdown pass, but he does go 28 to 37 for 348. He was sacked 9 times in this game. Now, take in also consideration the amount of times he avoided a sack in this game. The Titans' pass rush was off the charts good. We knew that was going to be an issue for Cincinnati. We knew it was going to be problematic for Burrow. He was still able to find Ja'Marr Chase 5 times for 109 yards. In a Logan Wilson interception off a tip ball with 20 seconds remaining, set up an Evan McPherson 52-yard game-winning field goal. Now, before we actually go into the game, this is what McPherson had to say before he stepped on the field to attempt said game-winning field goal.
Oh, that guy's unbelievable. He said, so he was talking to Brandon as he was going out to kick. He gave a little warm-up swing, and he said, looks like we're going to the AFC Championship right before he went out there to kick it.
That's Joe Burrow on McPherson heading out. That's some confidence from the young kicker heading out to on the road, by the way, in 19 degrees, knowing that you're going to send your team to the AFC title game. 19-16, Bengals get the win. Derrick Henry did play, did start, wasn't overly effective, but you give the Bengals credit. They found a way to make some plays late, sloppy throughout the course of most of this game. And they're going to move on to the AFC title game.
Can't say that anything about last night's game was surprising either. Like, or anything about Saturday night's game was surprising either. Because to me, like, I think Derrick Henry's a great, great back. I think he's got a lot of physical ability. But if you can somehow force him to stop before he hits the line of scrimmage, he's a totally different player. Totally different player. He's just so big. And think about how big you have to be.
Look how big.
At 6'3", you can't stop on a dime. And he never has. Now, if they can get good initial surge and they can push the initial surge, then and he gets to the second level untouched, it's over. Like the guy will, he'll run over defensive linemen at that point if they're on roller skates. Like he will kill you. But if you can get him to change directions, that's always been the playbook on playing against Derrick Henry. If you can get him to change directions before he gets to the line of scrimmage, it's over. Now some backs, Barry Sanders and others, you stop them before they get the line of scrimmage, they can dance their way out of it. They can create their own shot. Derrick's not really that way. That's all right. But it was definitely a really impressive performance, I thought, from start to finish from the Bengals defensive line. Without Larry Ogunjobi, for him being out, and I don't know a single soul outside of Trey Hendrickson on that defensive line. Do you know anyone on that defensive line?
It's not a
star-studded group.
It's not a group of all pros. No, it's just not.
It's a solid group. I mean, you watch them, they're solid, but they're not super dynamic. That was the biggest shock to me. I thought Tannehill could at times be a liability. I thought the receiver core is fine, not great, but of course they're only going to be as good as their quarterback. I was most surprised that Bengals' defensive line was not able to hold up, especially knowing their big, high-priced defensive tackle Larry Ogunjobi is out in the game. I just did not anticipate them playing that well against Derrick, and I didn't think Derrick was the foot is not, I think, what hurt him. I thought Devontae looked actually a little bit fresher, believe it or not, which is crazy. I just thought the defensive line held up so much better than I ever anticipated. I was shocked by that.
And B.J. Hill has been solid. He's a third-round pick. D.J. Reader is a guy stepped in. You don't really anticipate he'd be that great. Sam Hubbard, more of a pass rush guy. So, but we talked also about going into that game late last week that this defense was much better against the run than a lot of people gave them credit for. I think they were fifth in the NFL in the regular season in rush defense, so it was going to be a little bit of a challenge, and they couldn't get that going. Henry has been hit or miss in the playoffs. I mean, he's usually above 150 or below 70 as far as his rushing performances in playoffs in his career, but I think this came down to Tannehill, and he made big mistakes late and had opportunities in which you can question calls, you can question circumstances. But nonetheless, he gave the ball back to Cincinnati multiple times and gave them a chance to go win that football game, which they did.
Terrible.
And
he was awful. I mean, I don't know how else to describe it. He was, and I tweeted it. I was like, Kyler Murray in a handshake with Ryan Tannehill. Tweeted it. I mean, I think those are two of the worst. postseason performances I've seen. I mean, the guy's coming off the edge. You throw it right into his face. Right. Pass, tipped up, intercepted.
Yeah.
First play, first drive of the second half. They're cruising, by the way.
Yeah.
You pull it on zone read. Pull it on zone read on third and one. I mean, there are probably six or seven different plays that he just looks like he was steering it too. I mean, you watch him throw. You watch some of these guys throw. Go watch Josh Allen, Pat Mahomes. Go watch Tom Brady. Tell me if they look like they're throwing darts or they're throwing absolute grenades, like full arm extension, like just let it rip no matter what, regardless of circumstance. Who cares? Look at Tannehill. It looks like he's throwing it from his ear and he's trying to throw darts. He's trying to be perfect. He looked so uncomfortable the whole game. And there was one play in particular. It was a completion, actually. He fitted between two defenders. A nice throw to A.J. Brown, a little over route, a little dig route right across the middle. He fit it right between two defenders. But it's almost like he barely threw it and could barely even release the ball. He's like, I just want to steer it right between these two guys. That's when I knew he was not seeing the field very well, and I knew he wasn't very confident with the football. He was awful on Saturday, and I feel bad for him because he's the world's greatest guy.
It was a rough performance, a rough spot for him to be in, because I do think at times like that, normally you're leaning on that rushing attack, that offensive line, Henry, the other backs, the tight ends, and it just, he needed to make some plays late in that game, and it wasn't going to get done. It didn't get done. And Tannehill goes 15-24. 220 yards. He did throw one touchdown, three interceptions in that game. You sack the opposing quarterback 9 times. You prevent the opposing quarterback from throwing a touchdown pass. You should win that game.
Yep.
Bottom line. There are no breakdown. Every other play, every other option, every other thing about it, the reality is you should win that football game. Mike Vrabel, just on how disappointed he was on that loss.
I'm disappointed for them.
you know, because I think that they all believed, obviously, that we would win the game, that we were just getting started, that this was a second season, and that the preparation and everything that we put into it was there. The execution, you know, wasn't. And it's disappointing, but I'll always hurt a lot more for them than I will myself. It's just how I've chosen to do this thing.
Now, Vrabel does not put the loss on Ryan Tannehill.
Well, I don't think Ryan or myself or anybody did enough to win the game. That's how it goes, Paul. It's never going to be about one person, not as long as I'm the head coach, which will be a while. So it'll never be about one person. We have to play better, we have to get open, not fall down. You know, defense got to get some turnovers, but we can't turn the ball over. We know that. We can't get stopped on down. So those are all the things that we talk about and reasons why you lose on. You know, our third down conversion wasn't good enough. Our ability to score touchdowns in the red zone. But we all have to play better. We have to coach better.
All right, so that's Titans head football coach Mike Vrabel. When we come back, we'll change a little bit, get off of Cincinnati and Tennessee. I did want to get into just some of the historic implications for the Bengals and what they accomplished by getting that game on the road in Nashville Saturday evening, but constant changes in the weather push your HVAC system to the limit. Never forget that. Protect it with a checkup from a Trane Comfort Specialist. It'll give you peace of mind through the cold weather. Trane is our official partner at Jocks, so find a comfort specialist near you at Trane.com. And remember, it's hard to stop a Trane. San Francisco, Green Bay, Rams, Bucks. Got to get into those, but historically, what did that win mean for the Bengals? We'll get to that next on McElroy and Kubik in the morning. Couple other games we need to roll into, but before we move on from Titans Bengals and got the rest of the hour open, if you want to be a part of the show, talk NFL, any of these four magnificent games that we saw over the weekend, 800-239-9569, 800-239-WJOX. Also need to get into the Jermaine Burton news to Alabama. We'll discuss that and some coaching changes down on the plains with the Auburn staff. We will discuss those as well. But Joe Burrow helped deliver the first road playoff win in the history of the Cincinnati Bengals franchise. That's the first time it's happened. It's the first time the Bengals will go back to the AFC Championship game since 1988. They made it to the Super Bowl that year. And if you think about postseasons with multiple playoff game wins in Cincinnati Bengals franchise history, these are the years that the Bengals have won more than one postseason football game. 1981, 1988, 2021. That is it. That's all.
That's it and that's all.
Joe Burrow, the first number one overall pick at quarterback to reach a conference championship game in either their first or second season. Ever. First time that's happened.
It's crazy.
Ja'Marr Chase, first rookie in NFL history to record multiple 100-yard receiving games in a single postseason. The first rookie to ever do it. And he now joins Chris Collinsworth as the only player in Bengals franchise history to have multiple 100-yard receiving games in the postseason in their career. So there was a lot for the Bengals that happened in that one game, being able to go grab a win in Nashville and what they did and a lot of history made by that team. And now they get to travel to Kansas City and play Pat Mahomes. But on the other side, in the NFC, we haven't really discussed San Francisco and Green Bay. Our big concerns for that game were the Niners' defense. And DeMeco Ryans had a great plan. Aaron Rodgers looked confused at times. He wasn't able to get comfortable, didn't really settle in. Obviously, the weather affected this game a little bit. Aaron Jones was still able to go 9 for 129 receiving. Rodgers, 20 of 29, so he was efficient. But those explosive plays, those big plays down the field just didn't come.
Right.
He goes for just 225. And, you know, I don't think Garoppolo was amazing. 11-19, didn't throw a touchdown, 131, but San Francisco finds a way to get a win, and it was because special teams, something we don't spend a ton of time talking about. And yes, this was essentially the kicker's weekend. I get it. As Mason Crosby walks it off with a game-winning field goal, but you had a blocked punt return for touchdown. You had multiple block kicks in this game by the 49ers. Special teams were the difference.
Yep.
And that's why it's third phase of the game. That's why it's important. And ultimately, that will send San Francisco to L.A. to play the Rams in the NFC Championship game.
And if I obviously the Rams were the team that won yesterday, had these roles been reversed, I think the Rams might have been pulling for Green Bay. And the reason why I say that is because I think the one thing, the Achilles heel to the Rams offensively, and all you got to do is just look back and look at their game in the regular season the first time around. The Achilles heel, and look at, by the way, what Tampa did the first two or three offensive plays of the game. Big, heavy run looks where they just power the football downhill. That's the bugaboo for the Los Angeles Rams defensive front. They're all great rushing the passer. They can all pin their ears back. But when you just maul them up front, that's a bad matchup. So it doesn't mean the Rams can't get those things ironed out. I just think the Rams don't want to see San Francisco. And that's going to be a fascinating matchup on Sunday. I would imagine it's the night game. I'm not sure they've announced game times just yet. Yes, that is the night game. 5:40 Central Time on Sunday night.
I don't think anybody wants to see Trent Williams lining up at H-back and pulling around, and which is what San Francisco showed a little bit to Green Bay on Saturday afternoon. That's no one wants to see that one. But
I was losing my mind, and it took Aikman like three plays to get to it. Like, well, come on, man. Like, 71. I don't care about Elijah Mitchell's history and backstory. Like, did you not see 71? We don't see number 71 pulling around and mauling
the best player
people
on the field.
Like, I mean, God, Troy, come on.
He's the best player in
go
that game.
Go right now.
Trent Williams is the best football player on that field in that game. I'm glad you agree.
I don't know if
good.
I would go
no,
that far.
No debates. Okay, good.
I'm glad you're okay with it. I don't think I would go that far.
But it goes a little bit further than just lining up Trent Williams at a different spot. We mentioned it after last week's round of games. For any defense, not just the Rams defense, but yes, they are a north-south defense. They are a twitchy, edgy defense. How complex this San Francisco run scheme is, the different looks that they're able to give you, how they give them to you, the different ways that they're able to get to different runs, it's going to be difficult to defend for anybody. And when you've got other guys like Debo that you can line up in different places, interesting to see his status coming out of that game. He looked a little bit shaken up late. The way that you can utilize George Kittle out of some of those looks, you know, changes a lot of different things. And it's not going to be fun for anybody to defend, much less a group that plays a style that's not necessarily conducive to stopping it. So, but I thought it was a solid play by San Francisco to get the game that they needed. They needed that kind of a game to beat Green Bay on the road and essentially beat Aaron Rodgers in that kind of a game on the road. Even though Aaron Jones got loose and he made some big things happen, Devontae Adams was still solid. I thought that was the exact style of game that Shanahan and company needed if they were going to go into that venue and get that win.
Yeah, and I thought that in the most impossible circumstances, right? And by the way, Jimmy G played a whale of a game. I know the numbers and the stats wouldn't indicate that. Fine. You look at his first four throws. His first four throws were on the money. I mean, absolutely on the money. And for whatever reason, man, the San Francisco 49ers, they weren't tracking it well or their hands were numb. They were just knocking the ball down. It's like they were playing defense. I mean, even George Kittle. When George Kittle drops a pass, you know something's wrong. That dude does not drop passes very often, especially when he's wide open. So that amongst, gosh, two or three other throws, but he was dropping them in the bucket really nicely. And yeah, it's obviously tough to throw the ball in those circumstances, which is why I felt like they had a pretty legitimate shot to make it interesting. We talked about it last week. I don't know why Green Bay's built the way they're built. Like, if you're, think about the Wisconsin Badgers. Just think about, when you think Wisconsin, what are they? Offensive line,
ground and pound backs,
you,
tight ends,
run the rocks. I'm never going to tell you to take the ball out of Aaron Rodgers' hands ever, but I'm just surprised they're not a little bit more traditional. Like, if I were Matt LaFleur, I might try to be a little bit more like the Tennessee Titans or try to be a little bit more like the San Francisco 49ers, where it's more about the downhill rushing attack and less about the high flying passing attack. I'm not, like I said, I'm never going to tell you to give Rodgers less opportunities. But in the playoffs, man, you got to be able to control the line of scrimmage. I know Bakhtiari's out and everything, but man, when you look at how they're built, I think the the inconsistencies that they've had in the postseason, very concerning, not just throughout the course of Aaron Rodgers' career, but Brett Favre's career as well. To have those two quarterbacks for 33 consecutive years and to have two championships to show for it is pretty disappointing.
Rodgers falls to 0-4 in career playoff starts against the 49ers. He has lost five playoff games in his career on the final play. Think about that. Aaron Rodgers has lost five career playoff games on the final play of the game. Just wild to consider how close he's also been, even though, like you said, historically, some people may look at it as a disappointment for that franchise to have what they've had and only have the amount of championships that they do to show for it. We'll go to the Bud Light Hotline now. Poe in Birmingham wants to chime in on the NFL. Welcome in, Poe. How are you?
Man, good morning. Cole Kublick and McElroy. How y'all doing?
What's great.
What's up, Poe?
Good, good. Hey, Cole Kublick, look, man, if anybody else won, y'all and Mac, I'm glad Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay didn't do it.
Why is
and
that?
Cole Kublick, I'm a Pittsburgh. Because, man, and this just me. Everybody putting Aaron Rodgers up there on the pedestal. Like, this guy done won 2-3 Super Bowls. Man, they won but one Super Bowl out of 17 seasons. You know what I'm saying? And this is just an opinionated guy who's a fan who is not inspired by Aaron Rodgers. Because what he do every year, he choke. You know what I'm saying? So they always talking about MVP, Aaron Rodgers. Okay, that's cool and well. But what's the main thing? Winning this divisional thing, getting around to the next round of the Super Bowl. He chokes. And now they talking about sending him to my Pittsburgh Steelers. Man, I can't have that. If they do it, Cole Kublick, I ain't a Pittsburgh Steelers fan when Aaron Rodgers gets
there. Wow.
I ain't no fan of Aaron Rodgers.
He ain't going to Pittsburgh.
I'm telling you, man. Good. Thank you, man.
No way.
You just brought something off my back. But, you know, y'all, that's just my opinion as a fan of football. And it's just the way I see Aaron Rodgers. Everybody always putting him up there, but he's always choking, man. And I think he's an arrogant cat. But that's just Pope. Look, man, I love y'all. Stay up. Do what you do. And McElroy, I'm glad he ain't coming to Pittsburgh. Your boy Poe, I'm out.
Appreciate you, Poe. If I'm him, I'm going to Indianapolis. I think that running game, you're indoors. It's the easiest division in football.
Quentin Nelson.
Quentin, I don't care about him. Easiest division in football. You got some decent young pieces on the perimeter. You got a great run game. Like, tell me what's so different about Indianapolis when compared to what Tampa Bay was when Tom Brady got there. A little worse weapons on the outside, obviously, but a team that's
also playing inside
around 500.
Yeah. And Brady.
And
Brady,
you got Jacksonville, Houston, and Tennessee.
Brady.
Oh, my God. What a murderer's row.
Brady didn't say it on the front end, but he did come back a little bit later after he had been in Temporal, and he said, listen, the weather had something to do with it. He's like, I'm old. Obviously, it helps me stay a little bit healthier. And I know you're still living in Indianapolis, but playing inside for a guy that's getting up there in age makes a little bit of a difference. I think the bigger question would not be for Aaron Rodgers. This is my opinion. The bigger question would not be Indianapolis, Pittsburgh, somewhere else. I think the bigger question is, does he play football? Because to me, there's a large part of him that just appears as though he doesn't have to have football anymore. That's just my opinion. That's watching interviews.
Is it because of the way he carries himself? His hair's down his back and stuff? Like, you just think this doesn't care about anything?
No, but I will say this. Part of it looks like he has not touched a weight in about 7 years. I mean, the guy, honestly, for an NFL football player to be as great as he is, he looks somewhat frail. Would you not agree?
You think?
He doesn't look, I mean, so I just wondered, is he?
He's probably doing a bunch of band work, dude. Why you got to hate on bands?
But, I mean, I know like in the NBA, band work is probably the majority of what a lot of those guys do. And, I mean, a lot of those guys look like they could run through a brick wall.
Okay, well.
I don't think you don't look frail and old because you're doing band work. I wonder just how much is he really putting into it right now? Because maybe he's not as into it as he always has been. I think the bigger question is just, does he even keep playing football? And I think there's a real chance that Aaron Rodgers is done playing football. I think there's a better chance that Aaron Rodgers is done playing football than there is Tom Brady's done playing football.
I agree with that.
So I think he could walk away.
Is he still engaged to that lady? What's her name?
I'm not sure where his relationship status is. But I think he could walk away, grow his hair out, play his ukulele, and probably have 100 in the bank and never care again.
Probably have 100.
I don't know what he's done with his money.
Oh, come on.
State Farm.
You would have to legit screw it up. You would have to legit screw it up to not have 100.
He may have 20 failed llama farms out in Wyoming that have
first of
gone
all,
bankrupt.
Llama farms print cash.
I have no idea where he is financially.
Llama milk is llama milk's big. It's big.
Llama milk.
Alan in T-Town wants to talk NFL. You're on the Bud Light Hotline, Alan. Welcome into the show.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
I'm sitting here listening to Greg go from golf during a major NFL recap to llama milk.
I'm waiting for Greg to bring out Bobby Fischer for the next best championship performance he's ever seen.
Bobby Fischer?
Yeah.
Holy chess. Cow.
I know he is.
Look, this NFL weekend was nuts. Man.
Bonkers.
I think Cole Kubrick's right on. I would go so far as Aaron Rodgers got to the playoffs, and it just looked like he was content. He had that first drive. It looked like cake. It looked like he was going to take the game and just walk away with it. And he just got content. And I think he's content to this day. I mean, he got where he's at. He's got his money. I think he's okay to walk away in his mind.
I'm with you.
But, I mean, I don't see the care about football like I do in Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers. And for me, that's concerning. And I just wanted to see what you guys thought about that.
Absolutely. Appreciate the call. Thanks for being a part of the show.
I think it's still in there. While he doesn't have the same level of intensity, when he almost looks, you know, I mean, he looks uninterested. But, man, that fire's raging inside. And to think that he's going to leave Green Bay potentially with as many Super Bowls as Favre eats him alive, because he hates Brett Favre. I mean, I think that probably is a killer. And I do think that he will play. I think he's coming back. I'd be surprised. Now, will it be in Green Bay? I don't see that. But I'd be really surprised if he didn't go for one more and chase one, because the guy's got so much game. He's on the heels of winning back-to-back MVPs. Back-to-back, not playoff MVPs, not Super Bowl MVPs, not the Elway factor of letting Terrell Davis be as much a part of the offense as he was back in 98-99. Like, we're talking about the best player in the league, technically, based on regular season performance. So I have a hard time thinking that he wants to see it end that way, and a fresh start and maybe a little bit warmer climate. I mean, why wouldn't you be open to that?
Rodgers signed a 4-year, $134 million contract with Green Bay that included $57.5 million up front signing bonus.
But after taxes, what is it, like
35.7 guaranteed?
How do you live on that?
You can't.
Average salary of $33.5 million. His cash due annually since 2018. I'm going to go backwards. I'm going to start in this year, 2022. Cash due, 27, 22, 21, 15 in 2019. And because of what I just stated before, cash due in 2018.
Yeah.
66.
Let me put, can I put one on
0.9.
Your, can I put one on
$66.9 million cash due in 2018 at 35.
Goodness gracious.
Can I put one on your radar just for a second? Just out of sheer curiosity, and this is not with insider information or anything.
Aaron Rodgers to the USFL.
Birmingham Stallions. That's right. I don't see that. But if you're Aaron Rodgers, where would you really want to go? Tennessee. Like, Indy makes a ton of sense.
Tennessee.
Maybe. I mean, I can see it.
He's got the ukuleles growing the hair out.
Tennessee.
He's got the hipster
ukuleles. Ukuleles big. And
Broadway. Real estate's part hard to get, but I feel like he could find something.
I think he could find something. Too close to Jordan, though. When you think about...
He's on an island right now.
Okay.
Right. Dude didn't even get the afternoon game yesterday.
Let me get you...
I'm not going to go into it, but yeah. Someone was sending someone else videos of throws yesterday, because they did not have access to the game.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. So tell me Cleveland wouldn't be somewhat of an attractive spot. I know that sounds crazy, and Cleveland is a place where careers go to die. I get that. But Baker Mayfield has led his team to the divisional round. And that's Baker Mayfield, by the way. They have a really solid core, especially on the defensive side. Offensive line's not bad. Great run game with Nick Chubb to complement what you want to do offensively. You got a good coach, a well-respected coach in Kevin Stefanski. I mean, I think Cleveland is of the levels of attraction, I think Indy is as attractive and Tennessee is as attractive, but I don't think Cleveland is too far down the list when taking into account the possibilities of where I might like to go. A lot of people say Denver, but then you're just following the Peyton Manning route. Like, I mean, someone's done that before. I don't know. That is not as attractive to me. I would be more intrigued by going somewhere else and bringing home a Super Bowl potentially for the first time, a la Tennessee, a la Cleveland.
We take them.
But then to Cleveland, you get out of the whole weather thing that we talked about. I don't really know if that's...
Yeah, I get that. I mean, don't get me wrong. The weather thing's real, but so is... I mean, the division is extremely difficult.
Division's different, but it's trending even more different because now Cincinnati looks a lot better. Baltimore, I think, is in a really intriguing spot right now. I think Baltimore's about to hit a fork in the road. They need to make some real
Baltimore
decisions.
Stinks.
As to which direction they're going to go in the future, and Pittsburgh's about to hit a rebuild.
That's let me put one more on your radar. What about New Orleans? In attractive, they have a terrible cap situation. So they almost have to blow it up. They're the most money over the cap in the NFL heading into this upcoming offseason.
It would work.
From the parts perspective, I could see where he would be interested. But if they have to rebuild portion of it, and if you're going to have to, can you make that happen if you're having to move that much money around? Would be the first thing that I would consider if you're Aaron Rodgers. Like, I'm not going to be able to come in and they're going to be able to go get this guy, save this guy, then bring me in, make sure that I'm not that he needs to come in and get 33 this year, but he's not going to do it for the league minimum. So I would think that would be. I might put New Orleans ahead of Cleveland.
Mm.
I'm not big on the Cleveland idea.
Wow.
But there are always others that could be feasible that might want to make a move to potentially make that happen. And so you will see. If we can start getting closer to the draft and certain quarterbacks are pushed out or discussed as being moved, then maybe there are other options that become realistic.
Mm.
Rick is in Southern California, wants to chime in on the Bud Light Hotline. Welcome into the show, Rick. Rick.
Hold some laundry here. I almost always agree with what you say, Cole. I don't know what it is, but you and I are of the same mindset on just about everything you say. And as far as you, McElroy, I'm an old man, six-decade Alabama fan, so I want to thank you for cleaning up the trash between 92 and 09. Good grief. Thank you very much. Hey, listen. First of all, number one, I agree with what you guys said about Rodgers. I thought he was disinterested, and I thought they were very overconfident, the fact that they didn't think that Garoppolo could come in there and beat them. I think they, had the game a foregone conclusion, and they just didn't play well. But the one thing about Rodgers, he doesn't play special teams. And I don't know that I've ever seen a special teams performance that bad, okay? And number two, other than the San Francisco 49ers, is there just no pass defense? I mean, I've never seen,
especially
in my
late
60 years of watching the NFL, worst pass defense in four games in my entire life. I mean, every single receiver had a Sound of Music type of gap between them and the defender. I mean, it was just ridiculous how open receivers were in all four games. So, I'm not a fan of any. I don't have a dog in the hunt here because being a just disgruntled Falcon fan all my life. But by the way, I wouldn't mind seeing Rodgers down in Atlanta. I think he would be an improvement over Matty Ice now.
I think Atlanta would welcome him with open arms.
Oh yeah,
it'd be a parade.
Yeah, speaking as a Falcon fan, I have nothing against Matty, but it's time to move on.
There'd be a few more Falcon fans, given the the bandwagon nature of the city. There'd be a few people that sign up for season tickets. I think in Falconville.
I know all of us have our issues with Rodgers and his attitude, and he always seems to be very aloof and all that. But the guy can play.
Yeah,
I don't care what that caller said a couple of calls ago. I've seen enough of Aaron Rodgers to know that when he's on, there's nobody as better than he is. So But anyway, that's my opinion. I was hoping you guys might say something about the pass defense. It was remarkably bad over the weekend. And like I said, the special teams for the Green Bay Packers were the reason for that loss, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely.
So anyway, thanks for taking my call, fellas.
Great call, Rick. Really do appreciate it. Special teams were the difference. And there's so many that sticks out. I mean, first Cooper Kupp multiple times against the Bucs. And I thought Aikman did a nice job breaking down just simple cover two and how you have the mistakes that Tampa had, but how do you have those mistakes in such a simple coverage?
Right.
And
how about two man and you give up the what was going to be maybe the game winning score to Gabe Davis? The coverages, you're right. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, receivers and quarterbacks are on another level now. It's not the 90s. You know, they're on another level. You got to cover for longer. Guys can extend plays. It's brutal. It's brutal. Plus, we're talking the end of game situations. It's really hard. But really, I feel like the only thing that you can do to create good pass defense now is rush the passer. It's the only way you're
stopped. You have to affect it.
It's like, if you can't rush the passer, you got no shot.
Well, last night, I mean, perfect example in overtime. You know, Jerick McKinnon is coming on a little deep cross for Kansas City. There wasn't a defender in the television shot. There was not a defender in the camera shot when he catches the football. And it's one thing to be open. It's another thing to just blatantly be left alone in overtime of a divisional playoff game. And it's mind-boggling to see. I think to even put an explanation point on what Rick was saying, yes, the pass defenses were lackluster, but late. The pass defense late in these games is what was really mind-boggling. When games were on the line, when scores had to be had, when scores could not be given up, to see receivers running free was just, it was unbelievable. It's one thing to just get beat down the side, like the Mike Evans catch down the sideline, he beat Jalen Ramsey. It's fine. It's going to happen. Okay? But to see guys running by themselves, that's what's inexplicable, and that's what you look at and you say, how does that even happen? So let's take something off what we just discussed there and roll it into our word of the day, which we will bring you next on McElroy and Kubik in the morning. Welcome back in. McElroy and Kubik in the morning. Word of the day here in just a moment. Before we get to that, the only words you need to know when it comes to real estate here in the Birmingham area, Gusty Gulas Group. That's it. Those three should be your words of the day every day if you're looking to put your home on the market or if you're looking to purchase a new home here in Central Alabama. Gusty and his group, they have access to homes before they hit the market, so they know what's going to be coming next and also have buyers waiting to purchase your home if you're ready to put it on the market so they can get you top dollar, whether it's marketing, whether it's being brokered by eXp Realty, or whether it's the people that they have relationships with that can help you get into or sell your home for top dollar. Greg, the Gusty Gulas Group, they have all that and more. And that's why if you're thinking about word of the day in real estate, Gusty Gulas Group, those are the three you need to know.
Yeah, thanks to Gusty's proven marketing system, he attracts hundreds of buyers looking for a home just like yours. Don't leave any money on the table when it comes to selling your home. And the Gusty Gulas Group will help you get thousands more than you ever thought was possible. Just check out the Google reviews. 830 five-star Google reviews. Those are your peers. Those are your people that you are in the community with. They're the ones that are rating Gusty with five stars. So Google it. Gusty Gulas Group. Google that. Or you can just go straight to the source. Go to GustyGulasGroup.com. That's GustyGulasGroup.com. And start packing.
All right, so we started this last week. I had another guy stop me walking out of Auburn Arena Saturday afternoon and said, hey, Mac and Cube, word of the day. Keep that going. Love it. Love word of the day. So every day we're going to try to come up with a word phrase applicable to football, keep the football education going, make sure we talk about football every day, hold us to that, and we'll come up with a word of the day to discuss on the show every single day. Morning. This is today's
criticism of Alabama education.
I don't even know what that means.
So what's today's thing over, cocky?
All right, so since we just discussed it in our last segment, and I feel like it's applicable now, something we were probably going to get to either way, cover two. And since it was abused over and over again over the weekend, and not just Tampa Bay's defense, but other defense. Cover two from a ground floor perspective, Greg, how would you define it?
Cover two. Okay. Now, there are a million different variations of cover two. And when I say a million, I might be understating that. There might be 2 million, because if you think of all the different ways you could show cover two or finalize a coverage that resembles cover two, you are in business. But at its very, very primal level, cover two means that there are two defenders, and since we're going to use the most layman version possible, let's just assume those two defenders are safeties. They are guarding the deep halves. So anytime you hear it, cover two, cover three, cover four, what that means is that that's how many players are responsible for the deep coverage. Cover two means that there are two players responsible for the deep coverage. So those two safeties, the strong safety and the free safety, or the boundary safety and the field safety, or you know, the right safety and the left safety, the strong safety, whatnot. If you want to divide up the field, it's just right down the middle. You have this half, I have this half, which means that underneath there are five defenders. The corners, if lined up in a traditional place, let's just assume all of this is traditional, they're responsible for the flats, meaning they're responsible for anything underneath. So basically from 5 yards to 10 yards, depending on how soft they want to get, they're responsible for the underneath towards the flat, towards the sideline. And then on the interior, your three linebackers, assuming just a typical 4-3 defense where you have three linebackers on the field, your three linebackers are responsible for the hook curl. They split it up three ways. So zone defense, you're covering space naturally. Should be pretty obvious when we say zone defense covers space. Well, when you think about how it's all divided, think about a blanket of coverage right underneath where five defenders from corner, strong linebacker Sam, Mike, middle linebacker Will, weak side linebacker, and corner. Those five defenders are responsible for 1/5 of the field across the ball, up to about 18 yards. And then the two safeties, they're responsible for the other part of the field, anything deep. So that's basically how you explain cover two. Now, there are ways to exploit cover two. The holes in cover two are right in the middle of the field, and then outside on the boundary, outside on the field, outside to the sideline, because you have two guys responsible for 52 yards wide. So you can take advantage from the middle, and you can take advantage to the outside, and the middle was exploited time and time again throughout the course of this weekend.
And so when you see cover two as a quarterback, or when you're just watching a game and you see pretty apparent it's cover two pre-snap, are you thinking attack the perimeter short and maybe deep middle? Are those your initial attack points that come to your mind first?
So basically cover two is built to defend the underneath pass. That's basically what it's there for. You have five guys in coverage that are responsible from left to right. Flat, hook curl, hook curl, hook curl, flat. Basically, when you have five guys underneath and you're only responsible to cover 10 yards, if you divide the field five ways, that means every player basically has 10 yards. Then you think about a guy's arm length, assuming he's 6 foot tall and his wingspan's over 6 feet, that's 2 yards just right there. So he has to go in one direction or the other. He has to literally go only 3 yards to the left, 3 yards to the right, potentially just taking into account his arm length. So it's fairly simple, I think, to cover the underneath. So when I see cover two, I'm thinking I got to push the ball down the field. We have to get beyond the first line of defenders, and we have to get matchups on the safeties. And if I can create matchups on the safeties, we're in business. You think about second and 26. Second and 26 was a variation of cover two. Where did they attack with Devontae Smith down the field? Right into the cover two hole. That hole on one side, the other hole on the other side, and anything right over the middle of the field, that's how you exploit cover two. And it's very, very easy to do if you can make sure that your receivers get past that initial line of defense with a full head of steam and they hit the safeties at full speed.
So that's our word of the day. We'll bring it to you every single day right here on McElroy and Kubelik in the morning. When we come back next hour, We'll get a little bit further into some college hoops over the weekend. Auburn, Kentucky, discuss that. And then obviously more NFL playoff action that we need to discuss. I haven't really broken down Rams, Bucks too much just yet. Some transfer news, some coaching news around college football. We'll do all that on the other side. That's next right here on Jocks 94.5. McElroy and Kublik in the morning.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.